to another episode of Indie Comic Spotlight, the show where we do a deep dive into an ongoing series or graphic novel from a company other than the big two. And this book that we're discussing today isn't even out yet. It's one of my coming soon episodes, so it's going to be spoiler free. But it's not just me. The last couple of coming soon episodes have been me ranting and raving about stuff that I love. And last week for Pride Month, we did Matthias Lehman's Parallel, which is much heavier than what we're about to do. I promised at the end of that show something light and fun this week, as opposed to a guy hiding in the closet at the end of World War II. Instead of that, here we are for Pride Month to discuss the Loch Ness Monster. And I'm here with the writer and artists, Natalie and Sarah. Welcome to Indie Comic Spotlight.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for having us. Actually, we're both the writer and the artist. Yeah. So
you did it all together.
It's sort of a collaborative thing.
You write and draw together. See, this will all come out as part of it. And I know you guys have the thing at the end, like, here's how we do it. You drew yourself into the book. So I guess I should have paid better attention. The collaborative team. I'm leaving that in. I'm going to leave my screw up in, as I was just corrected, rightfully so. Anyway, thank you for being here. This was so cool. So you guys are doing this with Macmillan Kids and First Second, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And First Second Books, by the way, everybody, they kill it all day long. First Second Books puts out them and Oni Press. They're just like, I mean, the last month, I think that's all I've covered is First Second and Oni Press on this show, because it's good stuff. So before we get into the Loch Ness Monster and the series that it has launched and these amazing characters that I fell in love with and gave 5 stars to on Goodreads, and everybody, when you get your copy and read it, you will go give 5 stars at Goodreads because it's that good of a book. Before we get into all of that, we're going to meet our creators. And anybody who comes on the show for the first time, as a rule, has to give their comic book origin story, because this isn't something that people bump into. It's not like you're like, oh, you know what, I'll do that. So let's get back in time. And young Sarah, young Natalie, there they are, loving comic books. Whoever wants to go first. So what was your first comic? What was your first foray? And then how did you parlay that into the job that everyone listening wishes they had?
So I think we both have always loved writing and drawing. I guess my
say who's who. Say who you are, just for the listener. Sorry.
Hello, I'm Natalie Reese.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gatter.
Okay.
So I guess my origin story is when I was maybe 6 or 7, I wrote a little story about a dragon rescuing a princess. And my mom, being very supportive, took the story, typed it up, slapped some clip art on the cover, and made me a printed out copy of it. And I thought, oh my goodness, you can make books, and the rest is history.
That's
it's all downhill from there or up.
Amazing. I love that. I did that with my kids once, like on a snow day, we made a whole comic book. It was amazing. Isn't it so cool?
Yeah.
And is that, so that obviously sounds like that there's been some inspiration there. Even still.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I've always been doing funny creature stories.
Nice.
I love a good creature.
Nice. And so what did you read after you made your own? Like, what did you then seek out and read? Were you a comic strips kind of person? Did you like comic books?
I mean, I was always reading the comic strips that came in the Sunday paper because, you know, it's good to have a good joke. I think my first real foray into comics was reading a lot of web comics as a tween and teen. So I could find all this really weird and interesting stuff for free on the computer. So I'd spend hours and hours going through stuff like Inverloch. What else was I reading? We've talked about it. Inverloch was the first one I found. Like Fallen, all of the 2000s cool fantasy stuff going on.
And I'm like blanking on all of them. Like I was like Bob and George. That's not
Phalanx. Phalanx was one. And like Kate Beaton, obviously.
Oh yeah, Kate Beaton's a huge one.
Nice.
Big influence. I remember printing out a bunch of her stuff to like tape to my binders for school.
That's
I printed some out to show to my teachers.
That's so cute.
Like my English teachers.
Mm-hmm. They were like, this is cool stuff. Well, I mean, because we of an age, we Gen Xers, we didn't get that. Like, you know, we get it now. Like we can, the internet's there for us. But like for us, if you wanted stuff, it was like you said, it was either in the paper or you had to like go to the comic shop or you had to go to like the spinner rack at the drugstore, which is where, that's where my comic book origin story started, was the spinner rack at the drugstore because I'm old. That's cool. I love it. And so now here you are still making it. So how did you go to art school, or did you just were like doodling and noodling and writing stories, like because your mom made you a published artist at a young age? And so that was it. You're like, well, listen, I got this out of the way at 6. Everything else is going to be a breeze.
Yeah, no, it's all been the same from there. No,
your mom's still your publisher. Your mom owns For a Second. No, that's not true.
God. Yeah, I went to college for art. I went to a university, Syracuse University. They have a really good art program. And also, it just worked out more for me to go to that type of school than like capital A art school. But the illustration program was awesome. And I feel like I got to learn like some more traditional art stuff that I might not have picked up doing just comics. So I learned about like painting and storytelling with a single image, stuff like that. And they also had really good like research libraries and other classes I could take, which was great. Again, looping back to the internet, especially when we were growing up and learning how to draw, there were a lot of good tutorials there too. So you could like go online and sort of learn drawing tips from there, or like talk to other cartoonists who might give you tips.
I think the Dershing Helmer.
Oh my God, those are so good. The Meek, that's the big webcomic I was reading.
Oh yeah, the Meek is also huge.
But yeah, those were great tutorials. I don't know if they're still around.
Yeah.
The tutorials. Yeah. Dershing's still making books.
Yeah.
Well, the internet's out. You can always go to the Internet Archive. If it was online, it still exists somewhere. Well, that's cool. Okay, so Syracuse, you went to a big state school. You know, like you said, capital A art school, which is awesome. But like you said, the resources are often limited. But when you're at Syracuse, they're like, we've got all the money. You're that. Look, Canada's right over there. You can go over and check out what's. Yes, yeah, so that's pretty cool. Awesome. That's awesome. All right. So, Sarah, what was your. Let's go back. Now we're going to get back. Back in time. Yeah. Get in the DeLorean. Your turn.
Yes. So mine started at the Scholastic Book Fair at my school. I had like, I think my mom just gave me like a 20 or something. It was like go nuts. And the thing I went go nuts with was a book called Captain Underpants and the Attack of the Talking Toilets.
Amazing.
And I think at that point I was already like interested in drawing, and I like telling stories like with my stuffed animals doing DBZ fights or whatever. But then like reading Captain Underpants and like have like seeing the characters themselves like draw comics, it never occurred to me that kids can draw comics until I saw it like demonstrated in the comic. So I started like doing my own like ripoff Captain Underpants. I think they were called like The Masked Mystery, and it was like a bumbling superhero kind of thing. And then it just went into whatever else I did. It was a comic called Ralph the Critter. It was like my first comic. And they were just like comics that I did in my spiral notebook at school, and then like ripped them out and stapled them together. I like came up with my own like imprint. I think it was like My Room Comics.
That's amazing.
House Comics.
And then Brian Wilson sued you to stop using In My Room. All of a sudden you had a loss. No, that's not, that didn't happen. No.
but yeah. And yeah, since pretty much since then, I don't know. It's kind of funny looking back. I even in like my fifth grade yearbook, they're like everyone like lists out like what they want to be when they grow up, and everyone's like the president or like a professional football player or like whatever. And like mine's being a cartoonist.
You always knew you wanted to do cartoons.
Yeah, like I just decided like this is it. I'm doing this.
Like that's amazing.
What I'm gonna do for the rest of my life, I guess.
Nice. And then did you go to school for it too?
Kind of, yes. I applied to go to SVA and I did get in, but I couldn't afford it. So instead I went to the Pennsylvania College of Art and Design, which is in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I don't know if you know about Lancaster.
I mean, I'm aware of it.
Yeah, it's like Amish country in Pennsylvania. Yeah. It's a very, very small school. I think there's like 200 kids total in the entire school.
So it's quite an extreme from, like, there were 200 people in her dorm, and you had 200 people at your school.
Yeah, it was mostly the dorms I couldn't afford from SVA, actually.
Ah, gotcha.
Like, I got financial aid for the rest of the school. I just couldn't afford living in New York.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went to Pennsylvania College of Art and Design. It was very small. I'm not a good student. I like learning, and there were like things that I got from going to school. Like it was very important for me to like leave my house basically. And I learned how to ink because I had like one comic teacher that taught how to like ink with a brush. That was very important. But other than that, I just drew on my own regardless of doing the assignments.
That's awesome.
That's what I got out of school basically.
No, I think that's fantastic. I love that. And I think that's okay. I mean, you know, like we all get where we go, right? You have to find your own way there. And everybody, you know, it's not always school. It's not always that. And it can be. I'm a college professor, so it's like, I'm like, you know, but I'm not that way. It's like, everybody's got to find their own path. And especially in such a creative endeavor, it doesn't, and that there's not, it doesn't automatically mean, you know, that's just like, oh, well, I've got the degree now, so everybody should be, you know, shooting money out of t-shirt cannons at me. That's not generally what happens. I mean, I wish. I mean, you guys did get a, listen, First Second Books is no joke. So I'm just saying out loud, you should be awfully proud of yourself.
It took a minute to get there.
Yeah.
From college.
And so what is that part of the journey? Like this, you know, you guys each have done, you've done other things too, but like, you know, specifically this, let's get to this story and like how the, and obviously, you know, as you already said, like you always like to draw critters and everything. And it does kind of sound, one of Rhea's questions was like, what were your influences and everything? But she also wanted, because you guys do really capture that middle reader, middle schooler, that like you capture the energy, the curiosity, you know, those, all of that so well. And obviously hearing then where you guys, what inspired you, you're like, okay, I see that. But it definitely feels like you knew exactly how to retell that and how to catch those emotions and those big emotions and the uncontrollableness of them. So what is it about wanting to tell stories from that time period appeals to you? And then how did that, you know, how did you create Bachness from there?
I mean, I think it's definitely a big thing of wanting to do this specific combo of like really sincere character dynamics with just absolute cartoon goofs. So you get to have a lot of fun, but you also get to like do the cool stuff of the characters playing off of each other.
Yeah, I think just in general, I really like coming up with character dynamics and having like coming up with a character then just having them bounce off of each other. Like if you look at my sketchbooks, I should do more studies, but I don't. I just do character interactions. Like I just write down small jokes between characters and have them just bouncing off of each other, basically, is how I just think in general.
That's awesome. Stories.
And I think middle grade is a good place to do that. And also I think it suits our styles and ways of working.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
I just love doing like off the wall cartoon stuff, but I also like to have characters like have big emotions and cry. It sounds weird. You're like, I love to draw children cry. That's not what I mean. I like to draw adults crying too.
Yes. And there's a lot of panic. Ronnie has some panicked moments, rightfully yeah. So. So for sure, I get it. Yeah. No, I think that's fair too. I think there's a weird sophistication that you can apply to this grade level too, because they're old enough to know stuff, but they're not old enough to know everything, even though they think they do. And so you capture, I think personally, you capture that really well. I mean, like Kay is, I love her. Like what a character. It's so fun and like confident, like, of course, it's just cool to have a character like that who's like just elbowing her way into the room. And even in the cast bios, from the back, you drew the cast bios. Even there, like the way that you drew her in the cast bio at the end is like, she's like bursting, even though she's small and over here, and she's the smallest one of our three leads. She commands every room she's in. And so there is, and we all know those kids in middle school who like just, those of us who weren't that way in middle school and who didn't have the confidence, it's like, oh, I need a friend like Kay. So I appreciate that. Do you find yourselves? Are you in these three characters?
Single character in the book is us, even yes. The bad ones.
Ooh, uh-oh.
Yeah, I think I put a little bit of myself into pretty much any character that I write. That's just how, like, for example, Luke, I didn't ever push a kid in the lake, but I was like kind of a bruiser as a kid. I was a little bit of a bully and I felt bad and I tried to change as I got older and like realized like I should not be as mean maybe. And Penny obviously is an artist and very sensitive. It comes from that. And there's like kind of a funny story behind Kay. I don't know if you wanted to tell it.
So you came up with the like base of the character before we like started doing all the group dynamic adjustments. When I was a kid, I did a project presentation about leopard sharks where I made a little costume out of a paper bag. And I stood in front of a class and I was giving my presentation, and somebody walked by the classroom and said, "Oh my gosh, that's so cute." And me, like 8 years old, was like, "I can't believe I'm not being taken seriously as a scientist."
I love that story. I love that so much. That's amazing. The indignant, you're like, cute. You have missed the point, sir or madam. How dare you? I challenge you to a duel. Nice. That's awesome. Did you have a little lab?
I don't know. The idea of like a child being wanting to be taken very seriously as a scientist, then also morphed into Kay, who is far less serious than that, I guess.
I don't know. I feel like there's a dark corner of, there's like a subreddit that Kay runs that people believe. People go to the Kay subreddit to get like truth
the
about
cryptids.
The Cryptids Wiki. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I love that story. Thanks for sharing that. That's amazing. Because that is like, because again, that's that moment where you're at that age, you're emotionally not ready for things, but like your brain is ready for everything. Mm-hmm. And so you just, there's that mashup. And these are some emotional kids. They're going through some stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love a good found family story. And especially, you know, and there's some breaking apart of that. And again, we're not spoiling anything, but like, these are definitely kids you want to root for. Like, you know, like you can get behind them and be like, I hope they're going to be okay. And you worry. So cryptids, right? So
mm-hmm. The other half of it, we covered the kids. Now it's time for the cryptids.
Right. Now their kids are awesome. So there's Luke, there's Penny, there's Kay. They're awesome. But the big thing that they're on about is that when, and again, this isn't super spoily because I think this is right on there. So they're on, I mean, it's called the Loch Ness Monster. So they're out to find the Loch Ness Monster, Bessie, who is a giant lizard chicken, sea dragon chicken thing. I mean, because they're
chicken,
all
part plesiosaur.
Yeah. Okay. Sea dragon's more or less there.
Yeah.
Sea dragon. I love that. I see chicken dragon. And I love the way the look on Bessie's face, it reminds me of the big chicken from Animaniacs. I don't know if that was intentional or not. Chicken Boo. I don't know if you ever watched Animaniacs. See, okay, there was Animaniacs. They had a big chicken called Chicken Boo. But again, maybe it's just the way that you draw a chicken is the way to do it. I can't draw a chicken. I'm a writer, not an artist, so I couldn't draw a chicken either way. But so tell me why cryptids? What's up with this? Why is this the thing that they're going for? And I know you said, Natalie, you liked critters.
The nugget that the general book kind of came from, are you familiar with the game Earthbound?
I am not. I'm not a gamer.
Okay. It's a Nintendo game that came out in like the mid-90s, and it's like pretty much like what if Peanuts was Final Fantasy kind of thing.
Oh my goodness. Okay. All right. Yeah. I know both of those things. I'm with you. Okay.
Okay. So there is a part in Earthbound where, so like the other thing is that it takes place in Eagle Land, which is America. And then there's like a Scotland equivalent called Winters. And there is a part where one of the characters has to cross a big lake. And to do that, he has to he meets what's called the Tessie Watching Club. And they're just like a bunch of like people with binoculars looking at the lake all the time. They're called the Tessie Watching Club. And I love this game. And I at one point wanted to make a fan comic about the Tessie Watching Club because it's just such like a funny part of the, it's like a very, very minor part of the game. I thought it would be funny to like play off of the antics of like these people with binoculars just always looking the thing, and then just like Tessie being in like the background for like, I don't know, like that kind of humor appealed to me. But yeah, that's pretty much where it came from. And then I was just like, okay, well, I didn't want to turn into a fan comic. And I was like, okay, much like Bessie, who is part chicken, part plesiosaur, the comic also kind of came together from a lot of disparate parts.
Oh yeah, because the main kid, Penny, the kid that we started out with before he started building the rest of the team, is from some slice of life comics that Sarah was writing a couple years before we started this. And it's totally normal, just about kids doing theater, stage crew in theater. But we thought it would be really funny if one of these kids in like a very normal high school story had this magical childhood.
Nice.
Yeah, so Penny came from like a previous story, like like Bessie. I think it was just like a funny, like,
yeah, the Loch Ness monster was a joke you told me, and I was like, haha, that's funny.
Yeah, and then that's, I just
write that one down.
I was like, Loch Ness. I don't know. Like, that's, it was just because Loch Ness monster sounds really funny.
It sounds great. No, I love it. As soon as I got the thing in my email and it was like, hey, do you want to read this? I'm like, yes, I do.
It's a kind of a name that sells itself.
Almost. It does.
Like, you can like get it immediately.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that came from that, and then like Kay came from that story that you told me. Luke came from, oh, we need another character.
I feel like Luke, we needed, because we had one kid who knows, one kid who's like the horse girl who believes in the creature, one kid who knows a lot about the creature. So you have two people who believe, so you need a skeptic to round out the team.
Yeah, and Luke kind of just came out of this experience of like, what if it was a bully that like was trying to be better? Because I feel like
they needed a little extra spice than just being like a skeptic. We needed a character arc in there too.
Yeah, because I think I also just wanted to tell a story about like a bully character that is trying to be better. Because I feel like, I don't know, sometimes bully characters don't, like, especially in like children's stuff, don't get to have depth in that way, or at least not in like short form. Like, if it's like a whole TV series, maybe they'll be able to have that arc, but I don't know.
Just like Vegeta.
Who's Vegeta?
Oh, from Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, see, and again, that's not my jam. I never watched. No, that's okay. A lot of people are like, dude, you're dumbass. I can't believe you don't know who that is. Here's my question about Luke, though. I think Luke is so fascinating of a character because it's not just that Luke is a former bully. Luke is Penny's former bully. It's not just a former bully. Like, I always feel like there's bullies and then there's people who have like their bully. They have their whatever it is, you know, like we're all Ahab, right? In our own stories. And we all have our own, you know, Moby Dick just taunting us out there. And so that was Luke. And so I found that particularly fascinating that not only is Luke trying to get better, but Luke is trying to win Penny back. Like, be, and Penny, because Penny's awesome, is like, yep, we could all be a little more like Penny. That's the lesson that I learned. Penny's better than I am, because I'd be like, Luke. And so is Ronnie, because Ronnie's like, wait, aren't you the kid that pushed my kid in the lake? Isn't that why this whole story exists? Because of you? Aren't you a giant turd? So
yeah, I think without spoiling, I mean, this is in the beginning of the book, but like I try to put in that Ronnie is not the biggest fan of Luke for the most part.
Yeah, and you learn later why. And again, you know, and again, we're not gonna get it. I don't even want to. I mean, I think the villain character is awesome, the main big bad, and I like that she looks like Alexandra from Josie and the Pussycats. I don't know if that was intentional.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Well,
I love that. See, I'm like going old school. Like, oh my god, she looks like from Josie and the Pussycats, which I love that. Anyway, but I think she's a great character. But she's such a spoilery thing. Like, we'll just know. Yeah. Everybody knows there's a really great bad. There's a really great baddie. And I think equally matched for our goodies. I think it's good. You know, you always want your baddie to be the opposite. You don't want it to be like something totally different. You know, like the reason Flash always fights a speedster, the reason Batman always generally fights, you know, other regular folks is because you need it to be, you know, like you need it to be somewhat equal. And so I feel like our baddie,
it matches well against middle schoolers.
There you go. No, it does, though. I think so, right? Because the motivation is also like just, it's all just like one big nerve. Like your villain's motivation is really simple and it's really base. And it's like, there's not a lot, like the kids have more depth than her. But I do think that is a very middle school thing. Like her reasoning is just because this is why I'm doing it. You know, so I just think that I do think it's a really great, a great villain there. But anyway. So you have all these amazing characters, and I just thought with Luke being somebody that it says a lot. Like, you do a lot of backstory, like there's a lot of subtext for us. Was there a concern there with that, with the fact that Ronnie, there's a whole Rhea, the person who is going to come on who asked the question, she and I were talking back and forth about how Ronnie knows everything that's happening and just plays dumb. And the kids, but you write it from the kids' perspective enough that you could, like, the kids think, oh my God, Penny's mom is so oblivious to everything. We're so smart. The whole time she's got their number. And we know as readers, no, but the kids don't know. And so I think that was just such an excellent character trait. You don't have to explain it. You didn't have to, like, bump in as the narrator to be like, hey, everybody, this is what's happening. You showed you didn't tell. So what was the process there of wanting to, again, write a book that's for middle schoolers to love, but their parents can love it because there's these things. And that if a kid reads this now, if a 12-year-old reads this, then, you know, she reads it when she's 40, she's going to be like, oh my God, I didn't even get how smart Ronnie was. Like, what was that part of the iterative process? Or did you already know from the jump that you were writing these parallel, you know, you were writing all the subtext in there?
You knew from the jump that you wanted a parent there.
Yeah. I think I was thinking about, like, how there's a lot of Pixar movies about dads, but there's not a lot of Pixar movies about moms in the same way.
There's a lot of good moms in middle grade graphic novels right now.
Yeah. I think everyone might be thinking of, like, there's too many Pixar movies about dads.
Which is the trope, right? The dead mom trope goes way back in Disney, right?
Oh, so yeah.
There's, yeah, yeah. That's true.
The other half is, I probably won't get the reference, but there is a, do you know what Digimon is?
I do actually know what Digimon is. Okay. Sure. Okay.
So in the first season of Digimon, there's a part where all the kids go back to their, like, to the real world with their Digimon partners, and their parents are, like, part of the action. Like, they're, like, they meet the Digimon and they go on, like, the Digimon adventures, but also they deal with, like, real world. Like, one of the characters is adopted. Like, there's, like, two characters where, like, their parents are divorced and they don't get to see each other very often as a result of that. So it's, like, very, like, real things that kids in the real world might have, like, deal with, like, divorce and everything. But also they're going on a monster adventure.
Which
they
is still good.
Have to deal with, like, this vampire that's terrorizing Tokyo or whatever. And I always thought that was, like, I don't know. Like, even as a kid, I was like, wow, these kids are having, like, real, like, I don't know, like, having to deal with divorce. I was like, wow, just like me or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that always, like, stuck with me. And now as an adult, I'm like, yeah, I wanted to, like, recreate that feeling of, like, realistic problems. That's also, like, kind of elevated by, like, fantastical, what's the word I'm thinking of?
All I'm thinking is, like, the cartoon goofs, but that doesn't sound very smart.
Like, magical. Well, there's a little bit of magical realism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like a fantastic elevation, I guess, of, real world problems.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like, so it's like, you know, Judy Blume books, but you fight monsters. I'm here for that. Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. But I'm here for that. And I think that makes it good. And I do think it's important to have parents. Part of the reason my favorite Narnia character is Jill is because Jill has parents. Like, you know, like, you, when you think about everybody thinks about the first few books and the pensive children, and they're adopted, you know, they're orphans and they're, you know, they are what they are. But, like, when you get to the later books with Eustace and Jill, they've got stuff to get back to. Like, they don't want to get lost. They're like, I got to get home. I got stuff to do. And I think that's an interesting commentary here. You'll be like, okay, it's not, 12-year-olds can't save the world. They need a responsible person, and it might as well be somebody who's awesome. And so you gave us a really awesome mom who loves her daughter, but, like, is accepting of Luke and, you know, I think really loves Kay and is like, oh my God, this kid's awesome. I love having this kid around. She cracks me up. So I think it was really smart to give us a real big heart. And I didn't even think about that, but it is very true that there is that trope of the dead mom. And you're like, what if the mom's not only not dead, but also not a jerk? Wouldn't that be cool?
I think it was also important for me. I mean, because I was raised by a single mom. Like, my dad was, like, kind of in the picture, but it's a whole complicated mess. But for the most part, I was raised by a single mom. So I also wanted to, I don't know, write a story about a single mom that cares about her kid very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she's just a folk. Like, she's not, she works at Hikey Likey. She's not, you know what I mean? She's not like a, it's not like single mom who's, you know, there's nothing tropey about her. She's just working class lady who's got stuff to do. And you know, and she's smart and everything. I just like her. She's such a well developed, it's like I met her before. Like, oh, I know her. I know Ronnie.
I base her a lot on my own mom and also my older sister who is a mom of three kids. Wow. So nice. I am not a mom, but I know moms.
Yes, and you've got nieces and nephews and things, so that helps too to
Yeah,
have
nieces.
Nieces. Okay, nice. It's very cool. It's so fun. And so you said you before we started recording, this isn't spoiler, it is the beginning of a series. So you didn't know it was a series when you wrote it, and then once you found out it was gonna be, when first second is like, sold, it's a series. How did that? And I already know you told me something. I know a secret, everybody. I know a secret. You don't. We're not going to give that away. But like, how did that change your story, the ending of this story, once you knew there would be part two? Did you have to adjust on the fly?
I don't think we knew until well after the book was done.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, maybe this is a bad habit of mine, but I feel like I'm always putting sequel hooks into the end of my stories, whether I know I'm going to get a sequel or not, which sometimes works out and sometimes doesn't.
Yeah.
In this case, it doesn't. Not to spoil too much, I guess, but for because it is going to be a series, that's not a spoiler. I wanted to focus, the next book is actually going to be more about Kay and the relationship with her dad. So I wanted to like kind of keep that going of like every book kind of focusing on what, like focusing on a kid and their relationship with their parents kind of thing.
Oh, so we're going to get a Luke book.
Yeah,
who can say?
Who can say? Well, I want that. It's, and I know this is a what's her name? Oh, she did Despero, Beverly.
Oh, Kate DiCamillo.
Kate DiCamillo. She did the Kate DiCamillo did the Rainy Nightingale books, and so she did, these are middle readers, the regular books, and so Rainy Nightingale is the first book, and you meet, there's two other characters in the book, and then the two sequels are about them. Like, so it's a series, but you follow each character and it's in real time. So like second book takes place after the first book, and the third book takes place, like Louisiana and Beverly are their names. Those books are fantastic and I love them. And that's cool to know, because it's like, it's part of a wider universe. And so it's like Penny is the heart of it and she brings them together, and just like Raimi brought them together in that book. So I love that. That's going to be super cool. And so then does that mean they're going to do three, or we're going to get like four and we're getting the band back together? For justice.
I don't know if I can say what our plans for the rest of the series are, but in book two, we also get a new kid to throw into the mix. Nice. And I love her. She's so good.
Yeah. I mean, if you're familiar with my past work, there's a short I did back in 2015 called Do You Like Anime? And it has Penny, and I'm considering it canon, even though the timeline
it
doesn't
is now.
Exactly
sure.
match up.
Yeah.
But there's another character named Joe who I'm also roping into.
That is so cool. Well, is there a link we can add to that? You'll send me for the show notes.
People can go find it. I think it's still on my website.
We can get a link.
Yeah,
because really we would want people to see that. We want everybody to see the whole thing.
I mean, it's a. Are you familiar with what a 24-hour comic is?
I am not. Look at me not knowing stuff. Old man, tell me all
I mean,
about
it's,
it.
Scott McCloud.
I know Scott. Sure.
Yeah, Scott McCloud. Like, I don't even know how long ago it was. Like a decade ago or so, or more. Was like, it's a challenge where you do 24 pages in 24 hours.
Oh wow!
Pretty much. And that's what this short is. Is a short that I did shortly after I graduated college, where I did 24. It's not exact. It's like I kind of cheated. But I did it within 24 hours, so it's a little
nice.
Bit rough. Also,
so it's like the National Novel Writing Month in November. But for a comic, but in a day. Wow.
In a one day, yeah.
Nice, Scott McCloud. He just gives his book away for free. Right? Isn't that crazy? Like he's just like, there's a Google Drive link that's out there in the world that you can get hold of his how to draw comics. Like you're just like, oh, yeah.
I read it in the library. It's just, so.
Yeah, I also got it from the library.
Yeah, you got it. But yeah, it's just out there in the world. Because I was actually going to teach a class on a comic book class. And it was just going to be a short little 3-week, like summer, you get one credit kind of thing. And so I was going to use, I designed the course with his book. Because it was like free. I'm like, I'm not going to make people buy a book. And since he's just giving it away, I was like, you know, the how to read comic one.
Is it Understanding Comics?
Is that
that's
what
the one
called?
Where he like explains
yes.
the like
okay.
rules of
no, it's
comics,
not called
and there's Making Comics, and
yeah,
I think there's been a couple more, but
okay.
Those are the two I read.
Yeah, I think Understanding Comics is the one I definitely read.
Then that must be what it's called. I called it How to
so
Read
good.
Comics, which is wrong. Maybe there's a chapter in there that's that. But yeah, he just, it's crazy how he does it. I guess when you make that much, when you're him, you can give stuff away. You're like, yeah, You can have it. It is an interesting time, though, to make comics, to make this your career. So because, you know, the idea, I want to get a little bit, you know, behind the curtain a little bit, that you are with First Second and Macmillan Kids, which Macmillan Kids is really killing it. I think they're doing some really good stuff there with the mergers that they're doing. And I don't love everything being merged, but that gets you out into bookstores and not just comic book shops. So, like, did you pitch it to First Second thinking you knew that Macmillan Kids would get it, or did you go to Macmillan Kids directly? And they, how did it work? Like, what's the nerdy stuff? How did you end up with them?
Sure. Do you want me to, like, start at the beginning?
Sure.
Go for okay. It. So the year is 2016.
Whoa!
Sarah and I are making comics together for the first time. We have our little like D&D OCs that we want to make jokes about. So we make a zine called Dungeon Critters and take it to SPX, which is a comic show. And it sells really well. And we make two more of them. And we give a copy of that to Calista Brill, who was our editor on Dungeon Critters, which we made a graphic novel based on the zine we made, basically. And that was with First Second in 2020. And then after we finished that and it came out, things happened, and we ended up pitching Bach Ness Monster after that. So we were working with Calista and First Second, I guess, as our point person. I don't know if that would be the right term. And then I guess it got passed to Macmillan Kids.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like working on books, I'm very like nose down, just kind of working on it. So
First Second is on the spine.
Right.
Yeah.
And I get the email from Macmillan Kids, though. Like, so that's
yeah, Macmillan is like First Second is under Macmillan.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I don't know if we count as Macmillan Kids or First Second.
I think we're First Second. I feel like they're probably just kind of, I don't know, interchangeable a little bit. I don't know if how much autonomy First Second has, I guess, within Macmillan.
Hmm.
I feel like this is a business side.
Well,
of things,
I was just curious. Well, the reason I was curious about, well, because what makes it, the reason I ask is because when you're with Macmillan Kids, like if you're with somebody who doesn't have that, it's harder to get into bookstores. You're just in comic book shops. And now you guys are going to be in bookstores, which makes it easier to get into libraries, which is where you want to be. So that's just cool. I just wanted to know the process of how it worked because I just think I always talk about publishers on here. I'm always, mm-hmm. There's certain publishers I love, First Second and Oni, I think are just swinging for the fences right now. I think in the superhero, like on the other side of the thing, the more adult, like Boom and IDW is really, they're both trying real hard and they're doing really good stuff. So it's just always interesting to me to see what people are willing to like take a chance on, but also to say like, hey, this is big enough that we want it under our kids, Macmillan Kids. So we're getting it out there and bookstores and everything too. So that's cool. So what's coming up? So this is coming out in a week. This Thursday when this comes out. So it'll be like in 5 days when you're hearing this for the first time, people, you need to pre-order this. There'll be a link in the show notes to their Goodreads page. I've given them a 5-star review and you should too, because it's that good. I like doing Goodreads because then they can pick where they want to buy it, right? From Goodreads. Mm-hmm. This is a drop down there. But I'll send a link to whatever you want, wherever you want, your website, I'll put all that in there. So, but what do you guys got going on? You're on my show, which is, you know, I'm a nobody from nowhere, but what's up? Are you going to go to shows? Where are you going to go this? What's with con season coming this summer? What do you got going on?
Well, we do have if you happen to live in Austin, Texas, we have a book launch event at the bookstore called Book People. That's actually on the launch day, which is the 27th at 6
nice.
p.m. We'll be doing like a live drawing demo and Q&A and all that. So that'll be fun. And then a couple days after that, we'll have a library event in West Bank, also in like the Austin, like Westlake area. And then
we're doing mice this fall.
Oh yeah. And then in the fall we're gonna be doing mice.
That's an independent comic show in Boston. That's honestly one of my favorite shows to do. It's so good.
Yeah.
Nice. The people who run it are extremely smart and really good at what they do, and they always get good guests.
Yeah, and I feel like
because they have you. See what you just did there? They have
including
good guests.
Us,
including
yes.
You. Yes, amazing.
I feel like they're really focused on books, also.
Yeah,
just makes it a good show.
Yeah, and I think it's important too because you know this is a graphic novel. It is a novel first, like it is dense. You know, not dense like it's not Crime and Punishment people, but it's like there's stuff going on. It's layered. It is funny. It's all the things that you said. It's funny. It's charming. These beautiful characters, beautifully drawn. My God, your art style. I do want to talk a bit about that before we wrap up at the end. But like, I just wanted to get people out there getting, I mean, because this is good. This is so good. I loved it. And I'm a, you know, all my kids, my youngest kid's 23. But I love books. Like, I love to read this kind of thing. I think these books are really important. It's important that these get into the right hands of the right kids. And you have a really good story to tell, and you didn't beat anybody over the head with it, right? You were like, everybody should leave reading Bachmeister feeling good, feeling excited. It was a rollicking adventure. There's jokes. I laughed out loud. Everybody should want Ronnie to be their best friend or their mom, however they want. And then, you know, but I just think you should be super proud. And I'm just really thankful that you guys agreed to come on here and talk to me about it, because I was pretty geeked. I really, really like it. So let's talk art style here at the end. So that's where all the places people, there'll be links in your show notes for all that cool stuff. And we're going to end talking about the art. My wife always says, it always makes her mad, there's only one comic, and you guys are co-writers and co-artists, so that's cool, but there's only one comic that has two people doing it where the artist is listed first in that saga. No other book in the world does it that way. The artist is always listed first. And my wife, who's not a comic book nerd and only deals with, I mean, she read, you know, she'll read stuff like this. She's a librarian. And she will read some comics. She read Paper Girls, because who doesn't? Because talk about a bully with a redemption arc. I mean, come on. But she always says the artist should be listed first, because the art is, it's a comic book. People are here for the art. And you guys have this beautiful expressive style, and you're working on it together. So tell everybody about that process of having two artists, how you chose the style. Because it doesn't look like, you know, the new Spider-Verse thing where it's like different styles. It looks like it's all drawn by one person. So how did you pick the style? Who adapted to whom? And why is it so awesome?
Do you want to take it or should I? I can start and then you can come in and rescue me if I fail. Okay. So, I mean, you can read the how we do it in the back for a little more detail, but basically the way it works is Sarah does the characters and the like panel borders and balloons and stuff on paper, and then I do the backgrounds in the computer. We actually first figured out how to do this making an Animal Crossing fan comic years and years ago.
And the way that to do the writing phase is that we don't work from a script per se. Like we do thumbnails, which is basically like a really small rough version of what the comic page will look like, because the way that I think about comics is visually first and like words and stuff second. And I feel like that makes it really easy to pass ideas back and forth. So like typically Natalie will do like a first pass and then hand it off to me, and then I'll add like,
you'll make it funny.
I'll add like three more jokes to it, and then hand it back to you, and then you can actually make it flow nicely.
I guess. I feel like I do like challenge. I'm like the cinematographer of the book sometimes, or I'll come up with these cool shots or like more challenging shots to draw. And then it's my problem when I have to do the backgrounds for that. And then you like take what I've written and like make the character dialogue a lot better. I feel like you're a lot better with character writing and jokes. And like that kind of rhythm.
Yeah. And then you're way better at like action scenes and having like compositions and having like the page flowing very nicely. At the end of the day, it feels like that I do all like the character acting. Like I'm the actor on stage, while Natalie is like the set designer. So she does like all the backgrounds and colors and how it actually like comes together. And that's pretty much how I think about it in terms of like using theater terms, I guess.
I also think having one person do the colors makes it look a little more unified, because I guess maybe if you extremely knew what to look for, you could tell that I was doing the backgrounds and Sarah was doing the characters, but I don't know, it's all pink and green, so.
Yeah, why did you choose the color palette that you chose?
I actually went into this one wanting to make it a green book, because I noticed that all of my other books were very pink or orange so far. Mm. I think green is a very nice fresh color to use both for like the forest scenes, because I love a good woods, and then once they get to a different location
we can't say what that green, is
but in a different way.
Right. Nice.
It's like Worm Green versus Cool Green.
Yeah, and that also pops off against the characters well, because I chose a pretty warm palette for all of the characters, so you get that, like, cool background, warm foreground contrast, so you can read the characters. I don't know if this is understandable.
No,
it's all like
it all makes sense.
Stuff.
No, yeah, it all makes
her,
sense.
That's her dream job.
And who does? And it, and they do. They come right off the page. That's good. They are there. It's, you know, and the colorist, like you said, the colorist does that. I had the color artist Hillary Jenkins on recently, and we actually, it's funny that you used theater terms, and because we actually discussed that. I said, are the colorists like, are they writing the score? You know, like, do you score the movie? And so, and because the other person who was on with me.
In a
yeah.
very particular
yeah.
way.
And it was
the
just,
emotions. That's such a cool metaphor. I'm stealing that.
Good, please. Well, we had this whole conversation because the person who was on with me, Allison, who's a filmmaker, also wrote one of the comics that Hillary colored. And so I was like, oh, I should have Hillary on. She's doing this thing with Matt Kent. And I had a Matt Kent episode coming out. And we're like, doing all this. So Hillary's on there. And so we talked about that. It was like a 20-minute, like, we're talking about anything other than, so this is what the show devolves into. I don't have a script either. It's like, let's just talk and see where it goes. I don't do a ton of interviews. I like have two starter questions, like things I definitely want to talk about. And then, you know, and then here we are. So amazing. This is great. I appreciate that. And I just think the process is good. And like you said, you do show this, but it would be better to talk about, you know, it's like us to hear it and have us hear the conversation and hear you guys finish each other's sentences as you're talking about the process. Everybody listening can understand why it is you work well together as a team. I like having teams on because I do think it's such a fascinating process to be like, this is it. And it's just the two of you. So who letters?
For this book in particular,
yeah, that's an interesting question for this book.
And for this book in particular, I do all the hand lettering. So if there's like sound effects or like someone's screaming, pretty much, I'll hand letter it. But for the this is the first book we used a digital typeface for, which Natalie was in charge of.
I mean, I didn't make the font. John Martz, I think.
Yeah, I made a font that looks like my handwriting.
Yeah, and did an incredible job. So I would take that and basically plop it in the word balloons that Sarah had already drawn.
That is quite a skill. Go, John. That's amazing. I wouldn't have known. That's awesome. Wow.
I think you can tell when you compare it to Dungeon Critters, which is all hand lettered.
Yeah. Dungeon Critters, I like wanted to make a point with like doing all hand lettering. And then it turns out that's very time consuming.
That's why it's somebody's full-time job. That's why they give an Eisner to the letterer every year, because that's what somebody does. You're like, oh, I don't want to do that as a job. I mean, it's an amazing skill. And I do think...
I mean, I do like lettering very much. And I am very passionate about it.
It fits, though. The reason I asked is because I often feel like a letterer can really make or break your story. And like your typeset matters. Like when I got my novel... When I saw the typeset for the first time, I like sobbed a little because I didn't know it could look so cool. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know. I was like, aw.
I feel like it's a very like underrated part. Like in the same way that I feel like colors also get kind of like downplayed of like, I just slap some colors on it, whatever. It's better to have colors than no colors kind of thing. I feel like people also feel the same way about like word balloons and like lettering in general and making it look good. Just like, I just put them in like a regular circle bubble with like a things pointing directly at the I don't know, like I feel like that stuff will just kill a comic. Like, it doesn't matter like how beautiful the art is underneath, if the word balloons are just slapped on there, it just like that's half of the art. Like, it has to be part of the art.
Yeah, and the fact that you guys don't write with the script, it also gives you that space to say, now that I've drawn it, oh, like you were saying, like sometimes you have to change the dialogue based on what the page looks like too. So if you're setting up a shot and you're like, it has to be the shot, and we wrote 30 words and we've only got room for 5. So, you know, you got to change the dialogue a little because of just that. You don't want, you know, you're not Chris Claremonting it and like taking up the whole page, and you're like, Nightcrawler is hidden behind this word balloon because Chris Claremont couldn't stop himself from saying all those words. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but like the X-Men comics from the 80s, Chris Claremont couldn't get out of his own way. It's like, okay. It's not, just go write a novel, man, and let the comic book artist, the artist is there. But I just think it's, you guys are an incredible team, and you should be super proud of it. I am so in awe of it. I just had such a great time. You can tell when somebody loves something. And, you know, like, you can tell when it's a job. You can tell when it's, like, writer for hire. But you can tell when it's... And sometimes writer for hire comes into a book, you know, he or she loves and is like, oh, it's awesome. But sometimes, you know, this is a love letter to a lot of stuff. And it really comes through. And I'm so glad it's going to be a series. I really, really, I was so excited when I got it. I was like, can I read it over the weekend? And like the next day I was like writing back. I'm like, no, can I get this? I need them on. Oh my God. How do I get them on right now? So thanks for saying yes. You didn't even know who I was. You're like, some random guy wants to have us on. So thanks.
I mean, I don't know. This was really fun.
Yeah, it's really exciting to get to talk to someone about our book. We finished this like a year ago. And the thing about traditional publishing is that, yes, it's awesome that this can be in bookstores, but those books have to get made. So it's nice to finally like have the book be in the world and get to hear people talk about it.
Yeah.
So you're done with the second one already then?
We're working on it, but
it's not quite. It's in process. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this is very cool. And so then in a year, if you're your open invitation, feel free to come back and talk about cryptids too. I want to hear more about Kay. I want to meet Kay's dad. I'm interested in who that guy, I'm interested in where Kay comes from. I love it when you get an Brenna Thumner came on to talk about Sheets and she's going to come on for Lights for the third one of that series. And it's just like, you just never know when you just stumble into something beautiful. And I think, you know, I get these emails where you're like, hey, you want to read this? And I do think middle reader comics, this is when we lose them as readers. We lose them in seventh grade. We lose them in fifth grade. You know, like every kid likes to read in third and fourth grade, and they get to middle school and they're hormonal messes and they quit wanting to read. But stuff like this book is going to want to keep people, like, it shows it's okay to be a scientist. It shows them it's okay to have friends and to have feelings and to be who you truly are. So, I did introduce this as, cause you're, let's talk about before you start telling everybody how we can find everything, and I'll include it all in the show notes, but I'm an audio learner. So I hear it. Your dedication to this book, as I said, this is a Pride Month book and we've kind of talked around that. I don't want to spoil anything, but your dedication choked me up. And then the book itself. So do you guys, how much of that do you want to talk about? Or is it just like, it's fitting that we're talking about this in Pride Month and then leave it up to the readers to find out. I don't want to spoil or give anything away.
I mean, I don't know how aware you are about the Texas ledge.
I live in Florida.
You can relate.
I can relate.
Yeah, so our dedication is for, let me just read it because it's right here, grab the book. We dedicate this book to LGBTQ+ kids and the adults who stand up and fight for them. I think we wrote that actually while the Florida Don't Say Gay stuff was happening. And also, like, the same things happened here in Texas. And I don't know, we ended up going to the Capitol a bunch to protest.
Do stuff.
Do, like, as little as we, I don't know. There's only so much we can do, I guess.
Of course. But you can vote and show up and be noisy. Yeah.
I don't know. We really wanted to, like, I don't know, stand up for them, I guess, or just, like, acknowledge them.
We got the opportunity to meet a couple readers earlier this year, too, who were very excited to tell us that they liked that there was gay stuff in Dungeon Critters, and I think about them a lot. Bachness doesn't have any romance in it like Dungeon Critters does, but one of the characters is on a gender journey that thankfully we have more books to work on.
Yeah.
I'm glad I left that to you. I didn't spoil it. Ha ha! Yay! No more.
Yeah, I don't know. We just wanted to acknowledge that
it's something that's on our minds when we make books.
Yeah, I don't know, because that's what we're, at the end of the day, we're making it for kids, but also, like, especially LGBTQ kids that might be feeling very scared right now. And I just wanted to, I don't know, at least on this dedication, give them a good feeling, I guess. Like,
be like, hey, this one's for you.
Yeah. Shout outs to you, kid. Like, I don't know.
No, but I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Because, I mean, again, as a parent of one of those kids, you know, it just means a lot. It was just nice. It's like, you know, I think it's going to be, you never know. I'm a crier in general, but it's also like, you never know how it's going to go. Like when you get choked up reading the dedication, you're like, oof. But it was, you know, it wasn't heavy like that. It was a joy and it was a love letter. And So I just really appreciate it. And I'm just, again, I don't, this word, it is Pride Month, and I keep saying you should be proud. And I don't mean it. I know I'm older than you, and I don't mean to be talking down to you, because I don't mean it in that kind. I'm like, you should be so proud of this. It's so good. It's so good. I really want people to get it. It's so good. And everybody should get this and read it with their kids and give it to kids, get it in libraries. I'm going to request it for my library. That's the one thing that we can all do, right? We can all make sure that we go to our public library and we request this book, because that's the place it needs to be too, right? Because the kids who can't afford it, they should still get it.
Honestly, shout out to public libraries. Our local branch has an incredible comics collection, like all ages. They have a good kids section. They have a good teen section. They have an incredible adult collection that has like Silver Sprocket books in it. I was really surprised to see. Really cool. Like, indie books and not just
like micro publishers, I guess, get into that library.
Yeah, they actually, a friend of mine just got his comic published with Marcosia Press, which is the British press, and I requested it in my local library, bought it. And that's like, you can't get, I mean, most of their stuff is digital, and they're like, yep, we're gonna get it. So yeah, those are the things you do. So I'm sure this one, because of who publishes it, my library will probably automatically get it, but I'm gonna make sure. I'm gonna put the request in. Of course. So I'll get the links from you guys, or from, I can't remember who I talked to. Morgan, is that who I talked to? Mm-hmm. I'll get your links from Morgan, but say them out loud. How do people find you? If people are like, these sound like amazing people, I would like to know more about them. How would they do that?
You want to go first? I'm occasionally on Twitter. It's just at S Getter. That's GOETTER. It's pronounced Getter. The O is silent. I don't know what to tell you.
Cause words. Yeah.
German, I don't know.
Yeah
And I also am occasionally on Twitter at @snarlbear.
Otherwise, I'm like, kind of the social media landscape is,
it's a little volatile right now.
It is super volatile.
So like,
we do have websites.
Say those. You
can find some of my comics that I need to update desperately. I have a website at www.sgetter.com, same thing, GOETTER.
Okay.
And I think mine is, no, I know mine is natalierice.com. It's pronounced Reese, like geese, like the bird.
Nice. Okay. And we'll get those links from Morgan, and we'll make sure that they're in the show notes by Thursday. And if not, I know how to spell your name, so I've got the book. I can look it up and I'll make sure I find them. So we'll put all the links. People, Loch Ness Monster, it's a book for kids, but it's not in that. And I like that you brought up, you know, Pixar early on. Because it is, it's like, you know, that's why Pixar movies work, you know, because it's like, it's for the adults too. Like, you know, the ones that I don't think have legs are the ones that the adults are bored in. So I appreciate it. It's so good. You should be, again, I'm so excited you came and talked to me. And if you didn't hate this, then in a year when the next book comes out, Cryptids 2, which I'm assuming, I mean, there's so many cool, like, you guys, there's characters that you meet in this are amazing. And then once we get the second book out, then we can spoil the hell out of this one and talk about some of the characters and that we met.
We can talk about.
Bleep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All those things that we haven't talked about yet. So that'll be super cool. But thank you for giving me your time on this day. And
likewise.
Yes. And be safe where you are. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you guys can go to find everything about them. And I always play music on the intro and outro, and it would be silly to not end with the chicken song. The polka, the chicken polka, you know.
Yeah, we're from Pennsylvania. Sure.
So yeah, because you're from Pennsylvania, it's a law that you have to polka if you're from Pennsylvania. Is that a true thing? All right. Well, that's
it's around.
I remember they had some at Music Fest.
That's amazing. Okay. Well, I'm gonna play the chicken song, unless there's something else that you can think of. Did you guys listen to music when you write?
When I write, no. When I draw, yes.
What do you listen to?
I mean, it depends.
Is there a Loch Ness playlist that you can send me that I can inspect?
I think I made one like 2 years ago.
I had a YouTube video of like a,
it's like the Digimon theme song.
I had a stuff YouTube like that. Video of a Mountain Goats album that I listened to a lot for this one. I don't know if it necessarily fits.
I think it's like Animal Crossing music and like the Digimon theme song.
That's amazing. Like that. All right, that's good. People, go find that. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Well, if you guys want to send me a message, you can go to my website, arfarina.com. could get my book. My book's out now too. You can get my book. You can get their book. Everybody get stuff. This is a place where artists hang out and do stuff. So go to my website. You can follow me there. Thank you both for being here. This was a joy and a treat. And I'll see everybody next time. Happy Pride.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.